Hey, what up, folks? So, once again, thank you. This is your humble host, Tim, and we got another episode of Wired. And today, we getting into blackness. We are going to be talking about one of my favorite movies. We're going to do a deep, deep, deep dive on it. It's called Get on the Bus. We got to play this song, though. Black movie. Black movie alert. Black movie alert. Black movie alert. We're going to be talking about Get on the Bus. Came out in 1996. And it's still 20-something years later. Still relevant. Deep dive. Say it loud. Black movie. Deep dive. So that's what we're going to be talking about on this episode of Wow. Hey, what up, what up, what up? This is your humble host, Tim, on Wow Word. So we're going to do a deep dive on this movie, a Spike Lee joint called Get on the Bus. Came out in 96, and it's very much still relevant now. So one of the things I love about this movie is that it does a great job at portraying the nuances in the black community. Okay, it lets you know that we're not a monolith. That means that we don't all think and act the same. Okay, we have different backgrounds, and that shapes who we are, you know. But yeah, so if you haven't seen the movie, it's on Netflix. It's on the Black Lives Matter collection on Netflix, so shout out Netflix. And it pretty much is this whole movie about about 8 or 9 black men. They're going to the Million Man March. That was a real event in 1995 to go see Louis Farrakhan, who is the leader of the Nation of Islam, has been, you know, working in the black community for a while. Very controversial figure, though. He's been working in the black community, talking about black self-empowerment, fighting against white supremacy and white thought. It's a lot of critics, you know, some of me being one of them. You know, a lot of his rhetoric is, you know, could be anti-Semitic, it could be homophobic, you know, so some people don't really like him for that reason, okay? But you can't deny that he has done a lot in terms of the black community, okay? So this movie, Get on the Bus, it follows these 8 or 9 people who literally get on the bus and they're going to see Louis Farrakhan speak in D.C. And throughout the whole movie, they pretty much keep asking each of the black men, like, why are you going to the march? Why are you going to the march? What you want to accomplish by going? And a lot of people, it seems like they just wanted unity, you know, because even though all these black people didn't agree on everything, they seem to understand that, you know, racism and poverty and white supremacy has been, you know, a factor in their lives in some way, shape, or form. So hearing someone who's talking about having black pride and black empowerment, a lot of that messaging, it resonates with almost everybody in the black community, even though we are not monolithic, right? So we may not all agree on every little thing. So one of the in on the bus, you know, they unify around different things, and then they show the divisions. Okay, so one of the divisions you see in the movie is talking about homophobia. Okay, so two of the black dudes on the bus, they are gay, and one is kind of like in the closet, and the other one is openly showing his affection for this other man, and a lot of other dudes on the bus are like very uncomfortable, and they're like, yo, what's wrong with y'all? Y'all gay. And then one dude, he is just kind of the, I wouldn't say villain, but he's the one who kind of challenges everybody, I guess, and he's challenging their relationship and being very rude and disrespectful of their relationship and calling them all types of gay slurs. And I think eventually him, this dude with the glasses, and another gay guy, they end up fighting, you know, because, you know, he just disrespect him so much, you know, just calling him all types of names. And then when he punched him, he said, hey, this is for Langston Hughes, this is for James Baldwin. Those are two black people who are black, but they're also gay, and they have fought. That, you know, Langston Hughes being a famous poet, and James Baldwin being a writer, you know, intellectual who was fighting in the civil rights movement. So that goes to show you their matriculation in the movie. It just shows you the homophobia that exists in the black community. And not only in the black community, but we're just talking about the black community right now. It shows you that homophobia, but it shows you, like, you know, the intersectionality of oppression, where black gay men were not only oppressed for being black, but they also were oppressed by other white people and their own black people for being gay as well. You know, so we don't, you know, in 2020, hopefully, as we move forward and we start studying history, we don't want to be the oppressors. You know what I'm saying? We don't want to fight oppression and then be an oppressor to someone else. You see what I'm saying? So you don't have to agree with the lifestyle. If you don't want to be gay, don't be gay. Simple. You know what I'm saying? Same thing with another topic, with the abortion. If you feel like that's against your religion and stuff, then don't get an abortion. But you can't try to block other people from doing what they want to do. You know what I'm saying? Like it says, judge not. You know, we're all imperfect people. You know, them or homosexuals, you know, people who, you know, homosexual, they, when they're doing them in terms of their relationship, that has nothing to do. That doesn't take away from your love. That doesn't take away from you. So I don't see why people are discriminatory when it comes to that. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, but it highlights that one issue. Is homophobia. Another issue it does a good job of talking about is colorism. You know, that same guy who was disrespectful when it came to the gay couple on the bus, he was also disrespectful to this light-skinned officer who we'll learn is an officer later, but about his skin color and just kind of investigating him and interrogating him because of his light, you know, he's light-skinned, so do you identify as black and you're not really black? He just made all these type of assumptions just because he was light-skinned. You see what I'm saying? And, you know, I think it's been a big battle with that for a long time in our community with colorism. And that's one of the effects of white supremacy and racism, because it's a system that makes, if it tricks people and brainwashes people into thinking that white is the only form of beauty. You know, and a lot of people still think like that, you know, unfortunately. So some people feel upset where some women, you know, or some dark skinned people get rejected by women, you know, because they want the light skinned guy or something like that. Or in the same thing, it goes for women. So, you know, if somebody doesn't like you because you're dark skinned, that wasn't the woman for you, you know, period. You know, so you don't want to base your standard of beauty based on how other people feel about you. You know what I'm saying? So you got to have that self-love. That's why I do love reading people like Marcus Garvey, you know, and I think that's why to a certain degree, a lot of people like Louis Farrakhan, especially black folk, you know, because he's going to talk about that black love, have black self-love. And to a lot of people outside of the community, or people who don't have a good reading on history, one of the reasons why you do need to affirm that black self-love is because it's been hundreds and centuries in this country of telling people that black was ugly, black was evil, black was unintelligent. So that's why we do need that affirming. We do need that. But sometimes just with them, sometimes it can come off as anti-white, but most of the time, like, being pro-black is not anti-white. So, you know what I'm saying? It's because of the realities of our nation, you know? So some people try to make that false equivalency, like, oh, why we gotta say black is beautiful, black? Because we literally had hundreds of years of people saying black was ugly. So that's why we need to affirm black is beautiful, because for a long time, systemic racism has taught us the opposite of that. So You know, so yeah, so the colorism thing, we got to get rid of that in 2020, please, you know. So it's going to come with study, research, and you know, and therapy, really, you know, for a lot of people, you know. So, you know, but yeah, it talked about that colorism issue. It did a great job on that. So before we get into the next, we got two other topics I want to talk about. So I'm going to end it right here, but stay tuned. On Wow Hey, so we're back. This is your humble host, Tim. And we're going to continue our rap session on this excellent movie called Get on the Bus. It's a Spike Lee joint, you know. So we already talked about two issues that I was, you know, that I was really fascinated by about a movie. Like I said, there's a lot of different topics that you could talk about with this excellent movie. But we're going to continue. All right. So one of the other issues that stuck out to me was this whole idea, or this whole conversation between the reform Muslim guy in the movie called Jamal, and it was the light-skinned guy who was the police. Now, that was one of the realest scenes I seen in the movie for a lot of reasons. So what happened was they were talking, all of this stuff, talking and joking, and we don't know, throughout the whole movie at this point, we don't know what happened with the Muslim guy. We just know he's Muslim, he is... You know, he's devout Muslim. He is, you know, faithful to his wife, or not his wife, but to his girlfriend. He's been seeing for like 2 years. So he's, you know, he's very reformed, and, you know, he seems very calm and collected and cool. And like you said, he's Muslim, and he's praying 5 times a day and all, and doing everything he's supposed to do. But as they're talking, and he's talking about his upbringing and stuff, it's revealed that he used to be a gang member. He used to be a gang member. He was a Crip in South Central. He killed someone when he was young, like 13. He killed a whole lot of people, you know what I'm saying, when he was in his teens and stuff. And he was kind of just talking about how he came to his faith, you know, how he became a Muslim and all of that stuff, how he was really lost at one point. And as soon as, you know, he gave that information, the police, the light-skinned police officer, you know, because the light-skinned police officer, his father was actually killed by a gang member, you know. So, and I guess he wanted to follow in his father's footsteps, not being killed, but just wanting to be a police officer and protect the community. So, but once he found out that he was a gang member, his whole, you know, attitude changed towards the black guy. Now, in most movies, when someone reveals stuff like that, and, you know, it'll be a kumbaya moment, it's like, oh, they'll come together. Of course, he'll understand, you know, that he's not the person that killed his father. But no, like, that was very, you know, this movie was real about it. Like, this dude was triggered, and he should be, you know. I think he should have been. You know, I'm not saying should have been. I'm saying if that was me in that situation, I understood both characters, you know, and I think that's excellent writing. But I understood where he was coming from, because just imagine someone kill your father, and then, like you said, the same type of person, you know, in the same area, you know, if it wasn't him, it could have been the gang that he was with, you know, that killed his father, you know, and he had a lot of pain and trauma associated with that, you know. So once he finds out that he was a gang member, his, you know, he gives his whole speech about how he reformed and how he was lost and how he came out of it, and then the police officer was like, yo, I want to see you arrested now, you know. He wanted him to be arrested. He said, I'm gonna work tirelessly to arrest you. And then the audience at that point, I'm shocked. I'm like, dang, like, I thought it was gonna be a kumbaya moment. No, you know, he was still very angry about what happened. You know, he was still very angry about what happened, you know, and that was a real emotion. That was real, you know. But I also had empathy for the reformed Muslim dude, so Jamal, because, you know, you could tell he was trying to get his life together, and he was real about his life. You know, he was very lost, and, you know, he was, you know, killing people and all of this stuff. So, you know, this was the scene that it's touching on a lot of these themes of like forgiveness and reconciliation and all of that stuff. But you know, it was very real. Like, you can't just expect people just to forgive and be reconciled just like that, you know. And just now, me looking at it in 2020, just imagine if those roles were reversed. You know what I'm saying? Just imagine if Jamal and the Muslim guy, his parents were killed by police, like in a fashion like George Floyd, like unjust, unarmed, you know, murder from police. And he found out that the light-skinned guy was a police officer. You see what I'm saying? His whole mood would have changed as well. He would have been like, yo, I'm not trying to sing no kumbaya right now. Like, from my point of view, you represent the oppressor. You represent people that killed my dad. You know, so that was a very emotional moment right there. You know, and I understood where both of them was coming from. You know, but when I'm looking at the scene, you know, I'm also, so I definitely understand both persons' feelings, but part of me is also thinking, you know, what if we created a world where you didn't need gangs? You know, so that's why you need to talk about jobs. Jobs is a public safety issue. You know, we need to talk about having a living wage. We need to talk about having affordable housing. We need to talk about all of these things because they're all tied to crime. They're all tied to all of that stuff. All of that stuff is connected, you know. So I wonder, you know, what type of world do we want to have? I wonder, can we fight to be in a world where you don't need gangs? Because when you look at the basic motivation for why people join gangs is safety. And a lot of times they're not safe because people are running around, you know, trying to rob people because they don't have housing, they don't have money, they don't have food. You know, so if we take away a lot of those motivations, I think that we wouldn't even need gangs. You see what I'm saying? So that's just my wish. And that's just something that, you know, I'm kind of motivated now to kind of fight for. But it's not going to be a magic bullet or anything like that. It's not going to be a magic cure all for this. But, you know, that scene, though, was very real, very real. Another topic that they talked about was this whole idea of Black Republicans. Now, they picked up one guy. He was from Memphis. He was like a businessman. He had a nice suit. He had a fancy car. And he get on the bus, and the first thing he do is start trashing Black folk and trashing Black culture and disrespecting Black culture. And he's a Black man, mind you. And, you know, he disrespects HBCUs. He disrespects Black leaders like Louis Farrakhan and Jesse Jackson. So he disrespecting the whole civil rights movement. He disrespecting the policy of affirmative action that actually helped a lot of Black people get into these Ivy League schools and get into certain job positions, right? And people always look at affirmative action as like a handout. But no, I mean, if you look at the history of this country, the inequalities that we have in this country were built by the government, was built by public policy. It wasn't built because white people were just smarter than Black people. No, like you look at the wealth gap, you look at the income gap, you look at home ownership. You look at all of these statistics, and you really do a deep dive in history, you'll see very, very plain as day that these inequalities were created by government policy. You know, they're very intentional. They were created by government policy. So even if you want to talk about the Homestead Act all the way back in 1862, and it gave white folk the opportunity to come out and get quote-unquote free land that belonged to Native Americans, right? Or if you want to talk about the Pacific Railway Act, they gave land to these railroad companies and all of that stuff at the expense of Native Americans. Or let's even talk about the Oklahoma Sooners. You know, that's a college, but the Sooners were people who just got free land in Oklahoma, which it was Native American land. So, you know, so we don't want to talk about like government policy has resulted in that. Then we don't even talk about redlining and all of that stuff. But anyway. The Black guy, he didn't care about all that stuff. He just said, hey, Black folk, the reason why Black folk are down in America is because they're lazy and the HBCUs suck and all of this stuff. He was so proud that he was a graduate of Vanderbilt, which is the PWI. You know, it's a majority white college, a public white institution, right? And he was so proud of that, but then at the same time, he had to disrespect HBCUs. He had to disrespect Louis Farrakhan. He had to disrespect Jesse Jackson. And it's okay to disagree with him, but he was being disrespectful, just using all types of N-words. And like I said, we don't need, y'all don't need y'all hand. Why y'all want to get handouts from the government? And, you know, I did it on my own and all of this stuff. You know, a lot of stuff that that Republicans believe, but he was really doing it like on some disrespectful stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like 2020, like Candace Owens type stuff. So they end up kicking him off the bus, but then it was revealed in their conversation that the gay guy was a Republican. So they didn't kick him off because he was Republican, because it was a Republican gay guy that was on the bus. He was able to stay, but they kicked him off because he was just being disrespectful of black culture. You know what I'm saying? Just saying that we were lazy, and that's the reason why, you know, black folk were poor, and that's the reason why we had crime in our neighborhood, because we were just criminals, you know, and like, and all of these negative stereotypes, you know. So they had to get him off the bus, you know. They had to get him off the bus. You know, I like that scene. But it does reveal that a lot, it does reveal what I believe that a lot of these conservatives believe about black America. And they say it all the time. Like I said, the Candace Owens of the world, you know, they blame black people for being poor. They blame black people for being, you know, discriminated against, I guess. Like, even Candace Owens was talking about that George Floyd wasn't a hero and all of this stuff. But he was killed by the police. He was unarmed. He was unjustly killed by the police. And she's going into his background and saying he wasn't a hero and he committed a crime here and back in the day. That doesn't have anything to do with the atrocity that was committed against him. You know, and sometimes some of these conservatives today in 2020, you know, a lot of them, like I said, they look for every reason to blame black folk for all of the ills, all of the social ills that's going on in our community, all of the poverty, all the crime, all of the lack of job opportunities, lack of housing. They blame all of that on black people and black behavior, and they don't acknowledge racism and the structural racism that exists not only now but from our history, you know. So, but yeah, they had to get him off the bus though. Like I said, it wasn't about him being Republican, it was about him just being disrespectful of black culture, you know what I'm saying. And I think I even had to correct some people about HBCUs, and we had plenty of people come out of HBCUs. Thurgood Marshall, right? We had Martin Luther King, right? We have plenty of people who've come out of HBCUs that have helped the black community. You know what I'm saying? So, and they try to say, oh, it's a party school. Every school is a party school, you know? So we got to stop looking down on black culture. Now you're not going to agree with everything. No, but we can't look down on our hairstyles, you know? On people who wear dreadlocks. We can't look down on our women who have their natural hair. You know what I'm saying? We can't look down on people who have dark skin or light skin or whatever. We have to love ourselves. We have to love ourselves. You know, no, we're not going to agree on everything, but we got to stop making white and white culture and whiteness the standard for beauty, for intelligence, for everything that's good in society. We got to stop doing that. You know, and I think sometimes we do it unconsciously. You know, like, oh, you proper English, oh, you're sounding white, or you're doing this, you're trying to be white, or whatever, 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 you know, like, no, we are black and beautiful and proud of it, you know, and we, like you said, we don't always agree on everything, but we're black, beautiful, and proud of it, you know. So that's just my take on this wonderful movie. So go check it out and tell me what you think, okay? So this has been another episode of Wow Word. You know we had to send you off right. Peace.